Our lesson tonight is out of Romans chapter 14, verses 1 through 12, God's righteousness applied to not judging believers of diverse maturities. Having been positionally made perfectly righteous in Christ through belief in the gospel, the believer must live a righteous life. What is holy and acceptable to the Lord. That's what Romans chapter 12, 1 and 2 is all about. Righteous living includes relating well to believers of diverse maturity levels, what leads to differing views, values, and actions amongst various believers. And Paul addressed this subject in Romans 14, 1 to 12. I'd like to read the passage and then we'll look at it. Romans chapter 14, verses 1 through 12. Him that is weak in the faith receive ye, but not to doubtful disputations. For one believeth that he may eat all things, another who is weak eateth herbs. Let not him that eateth despise him that eateth not, and let not him which eateth not judge him that eateth, for God hath received him. Who art thou that judgest another man's servant? To his own master he standeth or falleth. Yea, he shall be holden up, for God is able to make him stand. One man esteemeth one day above another, another esteemeth every day alike. Let every man be fully persuaded in his own mind. He that regards the day regards it to the Lord, and he that regardeth not the day to the Lord, he regardeth it not. He that eateth, eateth to the Lord, and he that giveth thanks to God. And he that eateth not to the Lord, he eateth not and giveth thanks to God. For none of us lives to himself, and no man dies to himself. For whether we live unto the Lord. And whether we die unto the Lord. Whether we live therefore or die, we are the Lord's. For to this end Christ both died and rose and revived, that he might be the Lord both of the dead and the living. But why dost thou judge thy brother? Why dost thou set at naught thy brother? For we shall all stand before the judgment seat of Christ. For it is written, As I live, saith the Lord, every knee shall bow to me, and every tongue shall confess to God. So then every one of us shall give an account of himself to God. Okay. Paul dealt with mature versus immature views the believers have regarding diet in verses 1 through 4. In Romans 14, 1 to 4, Paul focused on handling the believer who is weak or immature in the Christian faith. For the phrase, the one being weak in the faith, actually appears in the emphatic position, the first position in the sentence. Often in Greek, as often happens in Hebrew, you can emphasize something by the word order. And in English, you have to be very careful. The subject generally comes first, and then the predicate. But in Greek, you can actually put the prepositional phrase, or a phrase, the one being weak in the faith, etc., and that occurs first. So that's what the emphasis is on. So Paul directed that mature believers were to keep on taking to yourselves. It's the present middle imperative form of the verb. The middle is a unique voice. We don't have it in English. We actually have active and passive. The active is where the subject acts upon the passive. The subject is acted upon. The middle voice is halfway between, where the subject does the acting, but he does it on himself or for himself. So keep on taking to yourselves believers who are immature in the faith without passing judgment on them over matters of dispute to Christian maturity, Christian maturity levels. So it's interesting. God doesn't want us, let's say if a person wants to come and join our church, we can't just limit the people joining to our church who happen to be mature Christians. If they're true Christians, and if they are in agreement with our statement of faith, a lot of times we've had people come to our church, they don't even understand all of our statement of faith. But as long as they're willing to work with that and submit to that, we want to accept them, because Christians come at all sorts of maturity levels. What we're looking for are really true Christians. And that's what Paul's saying here. To illustrate, Paul mentioned the issue of diet, where an immature believer, possibly out of a desire to guarantee that he avoid all meats that have been offered to idols, simply became a vegetarian, refusing to buy any meat from the marketplace. And you know, if that was true of us today, we'd probably have Christians even in our own church that would refuse to eat meat, because you never know sometimes when you're buying in the ancient world if you were buying meat that had been offered to idols. See? You may not know. So the safest thing some believers would do, they just wouldn't buy any meat. Well, in that case, the mature was not to despise or to reject with contempt the immature believer. And the weak should not condemn the mature as being guilty of sin, for God had accepted both in accordance with the dictates of their conscience. Actually, the scripture does not forbid. In fact, the Apostle Paul said that if someone, a believer, has you over to his house and he serves you meat, don't ask about whether the meat was purchased in the marketplace or not, from that had been offered to idols or not, because he says idols are dumb. They're nothing. So there's absolutely nothing innately wrong with the meat itself. But if the believer who's serving you says, do you know that this is offered to idols? By saying that, he's reviewing, he's exposing in his own speech the fact that he has a problem with meat that's offered to idols. Well, in that case, you abstain from eating that meat because of the concern for that believer and that believer's conscience. So that's what Paul is dealing with in this case. So, in addition, every believer answers to his master, who is the Lord, not to fellow believers. So no believer has the right to pass judgment on another believer over an issue of conscience. For God is able to make every believer who follows him in good conscience stand uncondemned of sin. It's a wonderful verse. Verse 4, who art thou that judgest another man's servant? To his own master he stands or falls. Yea, he shall be held up, for God is able to make him stand. That's something we have to keep in mind, that when we stand before the judgment seat of Christ, who's going to be judging us? Is it the other believers in the church? No. Is it any of the leaders in the church? No. Who's it going to be? Christ. So the point is, we have to answer to Christ. Paul then dealt with mature versus immature believers and views that they have regarding special day observances. The apostle noted that one believer esteems one day above other days, where another views every day as being of equal importance before God in his walk. In this matter, every believer is to be fully persuaded in his own mind of the correct belief. Now, the days that he's talking about would not include days of Lent. Lent is something that was invented by the Roman Catholic Church. And so we don't observe that pointedly, because that's something that was errant. He's talking about days that were prescribed, for example, in the Old Testament. The Jewish believers would observe Passover, and they would observe the Sabbath days and whatnot. And you're actually not under the law. But a lot of these Jews had a difficulty switching from one dispensation of God's regulations and rules over to the new dispensation. And so Paul had to say, you're going to have to allow each other some lag time in regards to this. We don't have that type of a shift. We're Gentiles for the most part, so we don't have one set of rules that God operated over us before we were saved, and then after we were saved, a different set of rules of God. But that's what these people had to face in those days. Well, Paul then drew conclusions on how believers are to handle all such cases affected by maturity levels. First, whether one regards one day as special or whether he regards every day as equal in value, he should hold to his belief on the matter out of respect for the Lord. That's a tremendous truth. He that regards the day regards it to the Lord. He that regardeth not the day, to the Lord he doth not regard it. That's something we need to keep in mind. We're answerable to Christ. Second, on the issue of diet, where one may believe he can honor the Lord by eating a certain food, or whether he abstains from it in honoring God, he is to do so, in either case, in honor of the Lord. The last part of verse 6, he that eateth to the Lord, for he giveth God thanks, and he that eateth not to the Lord, he eateth not, and giveth God thanks. Third, Paul noted that in every matter, no believer lives to himself, no believer dies to himself. For whether he lives or whether he lives or he dies to the Lord, for every believer is God's possession. To this end, Christ both died and rose, that he might be Lord of both the dead and the living. It's interesting, we were talking about this in the adult Sunday school class this morning. We should actually be living our lives right now, as though we're going to be in the presence of the Lord tonight or tomorrow, okay? Because we really don't know when the rapture is going to occur. But from God's perspective, that's how we ought to be functioning. And if that's the case, what we do or what we don't do here should be done in full awareness of the fact that we're going to give an account to God. So we just have to keep our focus on heaven and on the Lord, and we're going to be answering to him. So no believer, fourth, has the right to judge another believer on matters of conscience. For each of us will stand before the judgment seat of Christ and shall bow to him and confess that he is God. So in other words, every believer will give an account of himself to the Lord, not to other believers. So no believer has the right to pass judgment on another believer on a matter of conscience. Now, we have to be very careful. This is on issues of conscience. It's not on issues of thou shalt not steal. I mean, the Bible's very clear, thou shalt not steal. You either steal or you don't steal. And if you steal, it's automatically wrong. But we're talking about issues of conscience where it's a gray issue and it's not clear. For example, the Bible doesn't tell us thou shalt own a television set or thou shalt not own a television set, does it? And yet we've got Christians all over the place who have differing views. Some view say, no, I can own a television set because I like to watch the sports and I like to watch some of the newscasts. Not everything on television certainly is good. And other Christians say, you know, it's so much of a stumbling block, I don't own it anyway. The point is, we need to respect each other's position on that because it's important. Every believer, his relationship to owning a TV or not owning a TV should be a relationship that is based upon his walk with God and exclusively on his walk with the Lord. So on matters of conscience where differences in maturity affect the believers genuinely think is right or wrong, mature believers should not judgmentally look down on the immature for their abstinences from what they perceive to be wrong. And the immature should not stand in condemnation against the mature for exercising what they believe before God they have the liberty to express. For every believer should live for the Lord, and the Lord alone has the right to judge each believer who is his servant. So an application on matters outside of clear scriptural direction where conscience and one's spiritual maturity levels affect what he either thinks is wrong or is right in Christian liberty to pursue, each of us must refuse to pass judgment on those who differ from us. We must always realize that God alone is the master to whom every believer must answer, not some other believer, that we thus respect God's sovereignty over every one of us. 3, it only follows that we should make sure that all we believe and do or do not do comes from a clear conscience. Okay, having done that, and we talked about televisions, I'm going to tell you what happened with me on television. My wife and I did have a television set when they had the analog presentations. And then when the nation switched from the analog over to the digital, we got the kit from Walmart that, you know, makes the transition. Well, we couldn't get anything, even with the kit. It wouldn't help anywhere. But we were already sort of borderline when it came to television because even some of the shows that had been good were getting more raucous and more difficult and less edifying. I was wondering why I was spending my time watching it. So our option was, the only option we had is if we wanted to watch TV, we had to spend the money to buy a new television set, digital. Well, I didn't feel it was worthwhile spending that kind of money for the new one, so we just stopped watching television. So someone might argue, well, the Lord put you in that position so you would stop watching television. Maybe. I was borderline at that point, but we stopped watching it because of that. I think we still have the kits from Walmart of the transposing it from the analog to the digital. I don't know what I can do with them. I can't get it back to Walmart. It's too late now, but, you know, so be it. But we have the old TV, and we use it for watching, CDs and whatnot. We have a CD player, and so we watch. We use it for that exclusively if we ever watch anything, and we can control the CDs that we get and whatnot. But that's just how it happened to be. I don't know of another Christian who's come about his attitude towards the television because of that switch from the analog to the digital, but that's how it happened with us. Well, what's interesting, there's a believer in our church who's been a Christian for a long time, who told me that he finally decided to stop watching television because of something that happened on a show that he was watching. And there was actually open sin there being practiced right on the stage. And he says, that was too much. He said, I just couldn't handle it. And even though this person is an avid football fan and so forth, he says, that's it. So he gave up. And I say, hey, you know, that's your decision before the Lord. And I can understand that. So the point is, we have to respect each other in regards to conscience. We have to protect the conscience of other people and the consciences of... We've got different views. We have people on homeschooling. We have others who believe in Christian schooling. We have others who feel comfortable using the public school because of the particular public school that they're in and so forth. I think it's, and we've always taken the attitude, and I've taken the attitude, is to try to respect the sovereignty of the parents. The parents have the sovereign right to make the decision as to what they want for their children in regards to school, and I feel it very strongly. And so we've always protected that. And boy, I tell you what, I can understand the points of view of each position. You know, there are drawbacks in every one of them. There are pluses in every one of them. But the point is, I really believe that as a church, we should continue to protect the consciences of one another and to uphold one another in the stands that we have before the Lord. I think it's extremely important that we do that and guide each one another in regards to that.